Good morning.
Morning.
How could you help but do a good job after singing like that? I appreciate very much Tim leading those songs. It's something that will add to our lesson this morning. We're going to start with the book of Joshua, all the way back to the very verse, the first chapter of the book of Joshua, and I'm going to be talking about this. So in my talking this morning, I'll be dealing with about the first six chapters of the book of Joshua. If you want to try to follow along as I'm going through these by memory, you're welcome to do so. But in the first part of the book of Joshua, we find that Moses had died. God had told Moses, because he did not honor him at the rock. You remember God told him to speak to the rock, and water would come from the rock. And then he smote the rock and said, "Must we bring forth water to you rebels?" And did not give God the glory. And God said because of that, he would not be able to lead the people of Israel into the land of Canaan. And he would not be able to go in that land of Canaan either. And so here we have where Moses had died. And now Joshua is to take the reins to lead the people of Israel across the Jordan River into the land of Canaan. And so this is a thing that must be done. God had said to Abraham, you know, he would give to his seed this land. Well, he's given the land, but still, when they go into the land, they've got to drive out the people that's there. So there's work for them to do, and there's faith that they must have in order to do what God is saying for them to do. So they are across the Jordan River now from the land of Canaan. And the Jordan River at this time of the year, during the harvest time, was always flooded and was out of banks. And so when they were about to cross the river, here it was out of banks. There was no bridge to go across. And so how are they going to get across this river? Well, God told Joshua that he would magnify him in the eyes of the people that day and glorify him, and he would have the power that Moses had had before him. And so they told him that to have the priest to take the Ark of Covenant, and when they got up to the water and when their foot stood on steady on the ground in the water, that the water would part, that the water from up above would hold up or stop, and it'd be just like a wall that was built there. And this is what it did, and they walked through the Jordan River on dry ground. Now, they were told to take stones, each one stone from each tribe, for each tribe, and take it out on the other side of the river, and they were to pile these down so that whenever their children asked later on what these stones meant, that they could tell them that this is where God had led the people of Israel across the Jordan River and dried up that river on account of them. Well, Joshua then, as he starts to do what God would have him do, he told him to be of courage, or have courage and not to fear, and to do the things that he had to do to lead the people into this great land that God had promised unto them. But he sent two young men to spy out Jericho. Jericho was one of the great cities just after they crossed the river, the Jordan River, into the land of Canaan. And this city was fortified. It had a wall that was built around it. And this was not like a picket fence that was built around this city. It was a wall big enough that houses were on this wall. And so it was a huge wall. It was there for protection. So how they're going to get into this city? The first one that they have, the first obstacle that they have, here it is, it's walled, and they have a problem of wondering how they're going to get in. Well, God spoke to Joshua, and he told him to have the people to march around this wall. And he told them what to do. The priests, there was to be seven priests that were to have seven trumpets of ram's horns, and they were to go. There was the priest that was to carry the ark, and there was the soldiers that were to go before, and then one, the rear guard, to come up from behind. And they would march around this city one time a day for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, they would march around seven times on the seventh day. Nobody was to speak a word. Nobody was to make a sound from their mouth. The priests were blowing on the trumpets all the time, but they were not to make a sound until Joshua told them to shout. And so when they heard the trumpet from the priest, the long blast of the trumpet, and Joshua told them to shout, then they were to shout with a great shout. And they did. And the walls just came tumbling down. Now this, of course, was a miracle that God performed. But it shows that nothing is too hard for the Lord. And it magnified Joshua in their eyes, showing that he had the power that Moses had had before. And now they were to follow him as he was to be their leader. But when the walls fell down, it said they went straight into the city, everyone right before him or in front of him. And they took this city of Jericho. Of course, there's some problems, and we could have to spend our whole lesson on these first six chapters of the book of Joshua here today, but we're not planning to do that. There was problems. You remember Achan took some of the spoils that he was not supposed to take, and then when they went out against the small city of Ai, there was about some 30-some of them that lost their life because of the sin that this person had committed. But here now is Joshua in the reins, leading the people of Israel as they've gone across the river, and now they've taken the city of Jericho, and there's a lot of other things that they must do later on. Now, there's another wall, though, that I want also to add to this lesson today, one that happened a lot more recent than the wall of Jericho. Back several years ago, East Germany was under the communist reign and backed by Russia. And many of the people were crossing from East Germany over into West Germany to escape from the rule, the communist rule. Between 1945 and 1961, it was estimated that almost 3 million refugees flocked to West Berlin from all parts of East Germany. So many that on August the 13th, 1961, the East German police began building a wall sealing off the east-west border of Berlin, and the Berliners labeled this wall the Wall of Shame. On November the 9th, 1990, East German officials announced the end to the restrictions of the east-west travel there in Berlin. And as a result of this, on the TV, all Americans, if they wanted to, many Americans, watched this emotional sight as the people of Germany went out to try to tear down this wall that had been standing there for some 28 years. And they said they called it the Wall of Shame. And you saw them out there with hammers, with bars, whatever they could find, whatever they could get a hold of, out there tearing down this wall. And so this wall came tumbling down just like Jericho did. Freedom from the great wall, the great burden, the wall of shame, and the wall of shame fell to the ground. So just like the wall of Jericho came tumbling down after they had marched around it for 7 days or 6 days, and on the seventh day it came tumbling down, this wall of shame came tumbling down as well. Now, where am I going with this, Tim? Well, he's already given a little bit of preview of where we're going with it. In our lifetime, we face many different walls in our pursuit of eternal life. So every day of our life, there are things that we face. Now, I want you to read with me from Job chapter 14. I'm going to begin reading with verse 1 and read a few verses here from the book of Job. Job 14, verse 1. Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. And do you open your eyes upon such a one and bring me into judgment with yourself? Who can bring a clean thing out of unclean? No one. Since his days are determined, the number of his months is with you. You have appointed his limits so that he cannot pass. Look away from him that he may rest till he, as a hired man, has finished his days. Now I want you to drop on over to about verse 10 of this same chapter. It says, but man dies and lies and is laid away. Indeed, he breathes his last. And where is he? The waters disappear from the sea and the rivers become parched and dry up. So man lies down and does not rise till the heavens are no more. They will not awake or be roused from their sleep. And on down in this chapter, there was a question asked in verse 14. If a man die, shall he live again? And, of course, that question has been answered many times before, that yes, when we die, we shall live again. But now, why did I read chapter 14 of the book of Job? Because, or part of it, because it shows that we do face these different walls every day of our life. There are different things that we have to fight against, obstacles that we have to face, just like the Israelites faced the walls of Jericho. And I want us to notice, I have about five of those written down today that I want us to talk about. There's others that we could add to that, I'm sure. But we're going to take them one by one and talk about the walls that we face every day of our life. First of all, it's the wall of fear. If you remember in Matthew chapter 25, that there was a parable that was put forth that said a certain man, householder, was taking a journey into a far country, and he called his servants and he delivered unto them his goods. To one he delivered 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1. And he took his journey into a far country, and they knew that one day he would come back and reckon with them as to how they used the goods that he had left in their possession. And so when he came back to reckon with his servants, the one who had received 5 talents came, and he said, "You gave me 5 talents. I have traded with them, and I've gained 5 others. He said, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many." And then the one that received the 2 talents, he came and he said also, "I have traded with the 2 talents that you gave me, and I have gained 2 more. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joys of the Lord." And then the one that received the 1 talent came, and he gave back to his householder or to his master the 1 talent just as he had given to him. He said, "I knew you were a hard man, that you reaped where you had not sown, that you gathered where you had not strowed, and I was afraid. And so I went and hid the talent in the earth. And here it is, just like you gave it to him." He was proud to give it back to him just like he'd received it. But the householder was not proud. He said, "You wicked and slothful servant. You should have at least taken this and put it to the exchangers, to where when I came back I'd have had mine with usury." And he said, "Cast him out into outer darkness, where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth." In verse 25 of chapter 25 of the book of Matthew, he said, this is the words of the 1 talent man. "And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours." Today, we become afraid of a lot of different things. There's a lot of good that could be done if it were not for fear that we face. Fear in different ways, and we're going to notice some of these right now. Saul is a good example of this. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, he was appointed king. You remember how that the Israelites were judged by judges. They had people led by judges. God had chosen these judges, and they got to the point where they were not happy with the judges, and they cried out to God and said, "We want a king like the nations round about us." And so he sent Samuel to anoint Saul as king and gave him a command to go and to utterly destroy the Amalekites. The Amalekites had fought against Israel and tried to harm him as he came out of the land of Egypt. And so God said, "I want you to go back and utterly destroy everything, man, woman, child, all the animals and everything, that you're to destroy them, utterly destroy them." And so Saul gathered the people together, numbered all the foot soldiers and different ones, and he went down to the land of the Amalekites. And when he got down there, the Kenites were there with him too, and he told them that they needed to leave and get out of the way of the Amalekites because they were friends to Israel as they came out of the land of Egypt, and he didn't want to kill them along with the Amalekites. And so they did. They fled. They left. And he started slaying the Amalekites and did good for a while, and then he came to the king. He decided to save him alive, I guess because of maybe a little bit of pride by taking the king. And then he and the people decided to save all the best of the animals and livestock and things of this nature. And when Samuel was told by God that Saul had forsaken his commandments, that he had not followed his commands, that he was sorry that he had anointed him as king, then Samuel went to Saul and he said, "I've kept the commandments of the Lord." And so Samuel said, "Well, if you kept the commandments of the Lord, what is this bleating of the sheep that I hear and the lowing of the oxen in my ear? All these things were supposed to have been slaughtered." He said, "Well, the people brought these back to offer sacrifice unto God." He said, "Does God have as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifice as he does to obey?" He said, "Obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams." And he said that God had taken the kingdom away from Saul because he had feared. And Saul said in chapter 15 and verse 24, he said, "Then Saul said to Samuel, 'I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your word, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice.'" So fear is a wall that we face in many different aspects, in many different ways. It comes upon us sometime when we're not even expecting it. Well, let's go back now and see how that early in our childhood, even that we start out with fear. Here's a child that's just now getting to the point where he can pull up, and he'll walk around the sofa. He'll hold on to the sofa, and will not turn loose because he's afraid he'll fall. You try to get him to turn loose and walk to you. No, he's not going to do it because of fear. And so we learn early to fear that there are things that we are afraid to do. Somebody has a brand new bike, and it's never been ridden because they're afraid to try to ride it and afraid they'll fall. And so we can go on from that on to different things that that we do, even as a child. We have fear of losing a friend, and we won't do things because we're afraid we'll lose a friend if we do. People maybe will not obey the gospel because they're afraid they'll lose a friend. They'll not have the same friends that they had. I knew a man in Kentucky that when he obeyed the gospel, the ones that were his friends were no longer his friends because he would not go to the same places or do the same things that they did before. And so they cut him off as a friend because he had obeyed the gospel, and he no longer would go to the dances with them and places like that they had gone before. And then there's the fear of embarrassment. You know, sometimes people will not obey the gospel because they know if some of their friends find out that they love the Lord, or they're obeying the Lord, that they attend services, that they've been baptized, that they're going to make fun of them. They'll be embarrassed because of it. Or the fear of being cast out of some social club or group. Many young people have found themselves in trouble in places where they did not need to be and did not want to be because they were afraid that they'd be cast out of the social club that they were in, some group of young people that they want to be a part of, and they're afraid that they'd not be if they did what was right. And so we have that wall of fear. But that wall of fear can be broken down just like the wall of Jericho was and just like the Berlin Wall was, if we'll do what God says for us to do, and we'll get more into that as we get into our lesson. Number two is the wall of pride. Pride is something that we all face, and maybe we have too much pride in some areas. And so no longer do we do the things that we need to do because maybe we're afraid of as we said, being cast out of a group, or we're too proud to admit that we sin, that we've done wrong, that we need to obey the gospel of Christ. You remember how that the Jews, that they said, we've never been in bondage to anybody. We're Abraham's seed. So why do you say that we need to repent or be set free? Said, we're not under bondage. Well, sometimes we're that way. We feel like that we haven't sinned. We won't admit that we've sinned, and we don't need to obey God because we're living a good life. We do what we want to do. Pride keeps us from coming to obey God in many different times or many different ways. In Psalms chapter 10 and verse 4, the wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. So there are a lot of people that do not seek God. They don't even want to think about God. And that's what it said here, that in his thoughts, God is not there. We're thinking about worldly things. We're thinking about things that we can accomplish as far as worldly things are concerned, and we're not thinking about the spiritual things. We're not talking about or thinking about laying up treasure in heaven. We're thinking about laying up treasure here on earth. Listen as God speaks of the wicked. In Psalms chapter 73 and verse 6, he says, therefore, pride serves as their necklace. Violence covers them like a garment. So this is what God says about the wicked. They're thinking about evil things, and they're participating in evil things and not in the things that a person needs to. In Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance, evil way, and perverse mouth I hate. So God hates these evil things, the wicked ways, and yet many times that's what we're dabbling in, is the wicked things instead of those things that are right. We are afraid to face the pride that we have. We have too much pride to admit that we have done wrong and that we need to repent of those things that we've done. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 18. He says, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. And so if we have too much pride, we're headed in the wrong direction. We're headed toward destruction. We're headed for a fall, he says. But this is where pride, it goes before this. Pride is one of the things of the world that is not of the Father. In 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, he said, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world." And he goes on to say that the world passes away and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. And so here is that wall then of pride that we have, the wall of fear and the wall of pride. Now there are other walls as well. Number three, the wall of grief. Sometimes grief becomes a wall unto us. Many people blame God for some one of their loved ones maybe passing away. So we blame God for that. I've known of people maybe lost a child, a young child, and they blame God, and they just turned away from God, turned away from religion, turned away from the church. At the very time that they needed God, they turned their back upon him because of the grief that was there. Well, it's natural for us to grieve when we lose a loved one. When Jacob died, Joseph mourned with a great and solemn lamentation or mourning for his father for 7 days. This is in Genesis chapter 50 and verse 10. And God expects that. He knows that we mourn for those that pass away, but we do this for a while, and then we pass it on and we go on with life because life goes on, and we must do the best that we can to be what we can be in life. We need to let go of the past and try to build to the future and be the most that we can be and serve God in the best way that we can serve him. Even Jesus was touched by grief. You remember in John chapter 11 and verse 35, it says that Jesus wept when he went where Lazarus was in the tomb, and he saw Mary weeping and the Jews weeping with her. Then it says that he groaned within himself, and Jesus wept. Even though he knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead, yet he was touched by sorrow. And this is the thing. It's normal for us to weep or for us to grieve over people who die. I remember my mother-in-law back a few years ago when her husband died. She told me, she said, "Well, I loved him as much as anybody could love anybody. But," she said, "I've watched my sisters grieve themselves to death over a loved one that they lost." And she said, "I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to grieve myself to death. I'm going to go on with my life and try to live the life that I ought to live." And she did. She started going to the senior gatherings and things where she could be with people that was her age and do things together. And she did a great job of being able to handle the grief that was there. Different people handle it different ways, and there's no way of telling you how to handle it exactly because everybody has to figure out their own way of handling the grief that's there. The loss of something valuable maybe would cause us to grieve. Maybe there's been a house that you've been wanting all your life, and finally you've built the house and it's just what you want. You moved into it, haven't been there long, and all of a sudden it's destroyed by storm or by flood or by fire or whatever. And so here is the great loss that's there, the house that you had dreamed about. Or maybe it's money. Maybe you've had money that you have invested into some particular thing, and that went sour, and you lost all the money that you'd invested. Back in the 30s when the Great Depression and the banks closed their doors, there were a lot of people that took their lives because they'd lost their money that they had. And so this causes grief with a lot of people. Now listen to what Job said. You know, Job is one that lost everything that he had there in one day's time almost, it seemed like. But Job said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In Job chapter 1 and verse 21. And so, yes, there are problems that come. All of us have these problems that we face. And each one of us, when we face these problems, we think ours is worse than anybody else's ever was. Nobody else has ever had the problem that I have. And sometimes we kind of think, well, nobody cares how I feel or what I'm going through. But that's not the case. Now, number four, the the wall of neglect. Sometimes we neglect things that we know needs to be done. And Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 14, do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given you by the presbytery or by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the eldership. So here was gifts that was given unto Timothy that he was not to neglect. He was to use these gifts that God had given unto him. Every one of us have special gifts, special things that God has given to us. Things that we can do, maybe nobody else could do the same way. And so we're not to neglect those things that God has given unto us, but use those things to his glory and to his honor. We're not to be like the one talent man and bury whatever God has given unto us in the earth and not use it. In connection with this, Timothy was told, be an example to the believers. Now here was one thing then, he was not to neglect being an example to the believers. In word, this was in the things that he would say, in conversation, his actions, that he, the kind of life that he lived, in charity, that was his attitude, in spirit, in faith, purity. He was not to neglect any of these things. These were some of the things that he was to make sure that he used that had been given unto him. He went on to say, also to give attendance to reading, to exhortation, and to doctrine. And so we're to read the God's word, study it day by day. We're to teach it as best we can and to live it every day of our life so where we can be an example for others to follow. And so we're not to neglect that what God has given unto us. And so that wall of neglect is always there, and many of us use that wall in the wrong way. How shall we escape is a question that was asked in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 3. How shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed by us who heard him? And so how shall we escape, he says, if we neglect? So the negligence ought not to be there. We need to tear that wall of neglect down and do the things that we're capable of doing that God expects us to do. Peter said in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 12, for this reason I will not neglect to remind you always of these things, though you know them and be established in the present truth. What did he say? Peter said, I will not neglect to remind you of these things. So we're to tear down that wall of neglect and serve God the best way that we know how. Then finally, number 5, the wall of sin. All of us know that wall of sin is there. From the very beginning, God set forth right and wrong. In Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, remember how that God had created man and woman, placed them in the beautiful garden that he had prepared for them, told them that they were to dress and keep the garden. They could eat of every tree in the garden except the one that was in the middle of the garden. They were not to eat of it. They were not to touch it. If they did, they would surely die. So here comes Satan. Satan comes in. Did God actually say that you would die if you ate of that tree? Well, you won't die. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil. And they chose to listen to Satan instead of listening to God. So man must choose which he will follow. God has set forth right and wrong from the very beginning and gave us the ability to choose. And so what do we choose? Do I choose right or do I choose wrong? All of us have that decision to make every day. Satan is always there trying to lure us away from God and pull us out into his territory instead of God. God makes a way for us to escape those temptations, though, that Satan brings upon us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13, he says, there hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above that which you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear. And so God makes it possible for us to escape that wall of sin. We don't have to do those things that Satan wants us to. If we'll listen to God, he makes a way for us day by day. I must not doubt his power. You know, Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation. Jesus said in Matthew 28 and verse 18, all power is given to me in heaven and earth. And then he charged the apostles to go into the world and preach the gospel. I must have faith in him, that he is able to do what he said he would do, and that he not only is able, but he will do those things. John 8 and verse 24. Therefore I said to you that you will die in your sins. For if you do not believe that I am he, you shall die in your sin. And so we must have faith in God. In Hebrews 11 and verse 6, we're told without faith it's impossible to please him. For we must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So if we but do the will of God, do as God would have us to do, then all these walls will come tumbling down just like the wall of Jericho did, just like the Berlin Wall did. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13 says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And so we have the power, we have the ability, we have the tools to do with. We just have to do what God says for us to do. The lesson is yours today. The walls came tumbling down. Jericho walls fell, Berlin walls fell, and all these walls that we face day by day will fall if we'll serve God in the right way and use his word and his power that he gives us in order to fight off the devil and to turn these things away out of our path. If you need to obey the gospel, why not do so today while we have time and opportunity? Won't you come while we stand together and as we sing?